This is Get Lit with Literature. Welcome. This is Monk. There's more at my website, allbook-books.com. So I was thinking about doing something special for the 100th podcast of Get Lit with Literature. But then I remembered a line in a fabulous book that I'm reading. We treat certain commemorative anniversaries as somehow more special or significant than others. For example, a 25th wedding anniversary as compared with a 24th or 26th. And I started to realize how arbitrary the numbers are. 99, 100, 101, what's the difference? So, decided to do this show about this amazing book, Physics as Metaphor by Roger S. Jones. Roger S. Jones received his PhD in physics at the University of Illinois in 1961 and worked as a research scientist in the field of experimental high-energy physics at Laboratorio Nazionale di Frascati in Italy and at the Brookhaven National Laboratory. Hey, that's right. That's not far from here. In 1967, aware of his growing disenchantment with pure scientific research, Jones turned to teaching and assumed his current position as associate professor of physics at the University of Minnesota. Active in the formation of an experimental college at Minnesota in the early 70s, Jones developed courses with a humanistic approach to physics and mathematics and has also taught such courses in Minnesota's humanities program. Humanistic approach to physics and mathematics. And this book published, a Meridian book, New American Library, published in 1982. And this book was recommended to me by Stephen T. Newcomb, who I've mentioned numerous times for his amazing ongoing research and speaking films, books about the doctrine of Christian discovery, unmasking the domination code that affects so much of the world that people barely know how much it affects. But he recommended this book to me, and I wanted to have him on to talk about the book because he has read the entire book, and I've only read about 2/3 of it. So I thought that would be fun, but he's super busy this week, so we're planning to do a part two and talk with him about the book, since I think his insights will add a lot. There are certain points while I was reading it where I realized that he reflects that Jones reflects a very much a sensitivity to a native people's perspective, and Stephen is Shawnee Lenape, so he'll be able to provide some more insights on that. In the introduction to Jones's book, in fact, in the last 50 years, the trend in mainstream physical science has been away from consciousness and holism and toward the mechanistic and divisible world of the 19th century. So this is much of what he gets into, is showing how much of the science and physics has been rationalized and rationed. And so he presents what he calls the four cardinal metaphors: space, time, matter, and number. And, you know, and he basically deconstructs all of these to show the very much the ambiguity of these, and even in a sense debunking the proof of all of these in some ways. So that is a flavor of the book, and it is very mind-bending. He writes in the preface, although the scientific and mystical approaches to these metaphors are different, there is no real boundary between them, as examples from astrology, music, language, mathematics, and physics illustrate. The last three chapters explore the motives and ethics behind our physical metaphors and present some puzzles and suggestions to ponder. So basically what he's doing is questioning the whole perception of what we call reality and physics being based on space, time, matter, and number, and how by exploring these topics, it will open up your mind to other multi-layers and dimensions of consciousness which do affect everything. So one of the basic things that has been pointed out numerous times by many people is that much of science is about observing things as if you can observe something objectively and look at it of its own, whereas in actuality the observer is part of the experiment and is affecting the observed. And some have heard the phrase of Native people saying that all my relations are all are related. So this is where again he touches into that perspective in the introduction. I think of metaphor in the larger context in which all things are related to one another through an underlying unity, some cosmic principle of force such as Brahman in the Hindu pantheon. Metaphor tantalizingly evokes this hidden synthesis through its dramatic juxtaposition of apparently unlike things. It's as if the poet, in using a metaphor, not only refers to a symbolic or ironic connection between two things, but hints at the very creative act itself, which underlies all naming and evoking processes. And then he goes on to say how he thinks of metaphor. I think of metaphor in the larger context in which all things are related to one another through an underlying unity. Number is an interrelated aspect of the divide and conquer metaphor, which extends and diversifies the primal unity. Now that little phrase there, there's a numerous phrases when I'm reading this book, I literally have to stop. I could read a page or a half a page or a few lines, and I literally have to stop and think about it before I read more. And that's one of them. Number is an interrelated aspect of the divide and conquer metaphor, which extends and diversifies the primal unity. So that's another one I want to pose to Steve, because from a Native perspective, the dividing and rule more than conquer, because they haven't conquered Natives, but the Native people in this land, Turtle Island, that has been, and is a basic tactic used by geopolitics throughout the world to divide and conquer. So how does that relate to number? An interesting thing to ponder. One thing that came to mind when I'm thinking about that is that, and Jones does cite the Pythagorean interpretations of number as very significant, and yet at the same time, my interpretation would be go to the beach and how many grains of sand are there? Look up at the night sky, how many stars are there? Now that defies number. And that in nature we see an abundances that are beyond number. So how does that affect our consciousness, and how does that affect, if we limit ourselves to just numbering everything, we are literally limiting our consciousness. Because we think that we understand everything and we can say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and that we have, you know, nailed it and numbered it and labeled it and put it in its tidy little box, but that is only one part of the true reality. And that to me is what one of the gists of the book is getting at. It's like recognizing that the number has its place, but yet it is only a part of the whole. And even he gets into a lot of it is above my head. Some of the parts I can barely understand from the physics perspective. And yet overall, the way it is written is extremely, he conveys some extremely deep and thoughtful ideas and levels of consciousness in very simple language. So it's very accessible. But then at the same time, it's also a little bit complex as far as for somebody like me trying to understand all the sciencey parts. But it is interesting, and he touches on, you know, Einstein and Newton and classical bits of physics and science and all that. And even at one point I think he mentioned sort of how gravity, it's just an assumed what gravity is, but then he makes a point about, but what moves, where does gravity come from and what moves gravity? And so that reminds me of a Zen koan, which is, if all things return to the one, what does the one return to? If all things return to the one, what does the one return to? So it's that kind of flavor that this book has, making one think about what's going on and what level we actually think we understand things. Another standout for me is space. In his chapter on space, he uses the premise that much of science and much of the world consciousness of space is that it's this sort of the phrase empty space, that it's and that it's dangerous and mysterious and unknown and all these adjectives that go with empty space, and that we've made it into some sort of spooky thing that is other than ourselves, when actually space is not really empty and we are directly connected with it. So if I'm talking to someone in another part of the world, I could feel, if it's someone I know and care about, we care about each other, the connection, the feeling that is happening is closer, even though the quote space is distant, the feeling between us is closer than, say, someone, a neighbor or someone 100 yards from me who I don't know or don't get along with. Space would say that we are closer, but we're not. And so the distance and the space and those kind of things, there's an ambiguity to them that the science cannot, that the physics cannot really label. And as well, outer space as well, it gets into measuring, like the only way to get to the moon or Mars or whatever is by, the science is done by number and by measuring and by miles. But, you could dream about a planet, or you could feel the moon affects your emotions right here. So it's more immediate and more sensory than we often realize, than some ambiguous umpteen thousand miles to the moon kind of thing. So it really, it's kind of like he breaks down a lot of the typical barriers, and it gives a sense of a deeper consciousness and experiences. And I'll read a few of the highlights of quotes that I like a lot here. "For it is only in time that idols may be created and then destroyed. It is energy and desire that motivate all creation, that sustain the world. For it is only in time that idols may be created and then destroyed. It is energy and desire that motivate all creation, that sustain the world. At the start of it all is the primal rhythmic energy that leads to the first pulse, the first duality. Which comes first, time number or energy rhythm? Von Franz points out that the ancient Greek words for number, arithmos, and rhythm, rhythmos, have a common origin in the verb to flow. What precious insights are hidden in the folds of language? Though people say, go with the flow, and life's about the flow, and don't get stuck, and so there he's citing how the words, actual science-y words for number and rhythm, are connected with flow. And he even gets into, mentions the Yi Ching, and divinatory practices attempt to open a window through which we may catch a glimpse of the timeless zone. Physical law itself is taken as an ultimate. It is as if the equations of theoretical physics were chiseled into the rock of ages or branded into the flesh of space and time, and we need not ask for deeper explanations. But that is the very point, one of the very points of his book, is that instead of just assuming that this physical law is written in chiseled in rock, as he says, that there are other layers to it. And I'm reminded now of the book I did a review about by Vine Deloria Jr., The World We Used to Live In, about the Native Medicine Men, in which stones, they utilize stones to find lost items, to see the future. So there, if a stone you can hold in your hand can do things like that, then where is the physical law? How does that apply to that? Participation is Barfield's term, derived from Thomas Aquinas, for an older form of consciousness, less geometrical and abstract than ours, in which people felt a participating connection with all things around them. It involves the sense of space that I spoke of in connection with astrology, if it can be called a sense at all. For it is we moderns who have taken all the felt relations of the medieval and ancient mind, reduced them to principles and geometry, and embodied them outside our heads in a cold, alien, empty space. Galileo and his predecessors did this too with our intuitive notions of matter in motion when they invented inertia. So there's one of the gists I think conveys a lot, for it is we moderns who have taken all the felt relations of the medieval and ancient mind, reduced them to principles and geometry, and embodied them outside our heads in a cold, alien, empty space. That to me sums up one of the sum-ups of what I'm appreciating about this book very much, is that it's showing what has happened to the loss of our sensitivity and intuitiveness, and following our, you know, literally being guided by dreams or the messages from nature. And much of the response to the COVID is all about the science. But meanwhile, little else was talked about. So I think this book, even though it's written a while ago, is still very pertinent, and it's quite mind-bending. On the cover, it says, a mind-expanding exploration of the human side of science in the tradition of Zen and the art of motorcycle maintenance and the Tao of physics. So part of what he's doing is he's unraveling the preconceived notions that are the underlying reality for the everyday world, and bending those notions so that, you know, one can look at things anew and feel and experience things anew. So we'll get more into what the book is about and some of the specifics, especially of the four cardinal metaphors and some of the in conjunction with a native perspective in the part two when talking with Stephen Newcomb. And for some of my first learnings had to do with the word metaphysics. So that's one flavor of it. I would also say that the physics is part of the reality of what we do. So, you know, when we get in a car and go somewhere, we are dependent on and relying on the physics, and we want that to work, of course, but there is also perhaps an intuition that says go down this street and an accident is avoided, or a dream of going somewhere and then meeting someone. So there's multi-layers of what we call reality and multi-dimensions that I think is some of what Jones gets at in this book. So we'll have more in part two. Thanks for listening. Be well.